But then it comes down to, is this important enough to you? Because if it is, you will find a way. If it isn't, or if there's something else that's more important, that's okay. But you get to consciously make that decision. Is this what you want to do? If it is, go all in and go hard after it.
You are listening to Hearts and Sciences, the podcast devoted to your success as a researcher and your happiness as a human being. I'm your host, Elizabeth Andrews. Thank you for tuning in. Today on the podcast, I'm speaking with Ansley Fender, founder of Grant Cycle. She was a grants consultant, and now she runs a company to support grant managers. We're talking about one of the toughest aspects of grant funding that everyone deals with, which is rejection. We touched on the psychological, the emotional, and the strategic dimensions to try to take some of the sting and fear out of it. I hope you enjoy.
So often, researchers, all applicants, want the secret formula so that they will never be rejected and they can submit and immediately get funded. And that seems to be a fantasy. Really, the only way to get to a viable project is to put it out in the marketplace of ideas and get that feedback. Have you seen that pattern? What have you seen?
I definitely have. In the grant world, it is mostly rejection. I mean, no one likes being rejected. Like, take the day, take an hour, like, just take what you need. But also, a lot of people don't realize the rejection rate. A grant writer, a good grant writer, will have an acceptance rate of somewhere around 30 to 35%. These are professional grant writers, and that is a good success rate. So we're talking about a 60%+ fail rate. I mean, at some point, you really just have to realize that you're in no way diminished by the failure of the thing. And the thing isn't diminished either. Resubmit or submit to another funder.
Is there any way in which the high rejection rate is a feature and not a bug?
I don't know that I would talk about it in terms of positive versus negative, but I don't think there's any way around it. Because if you think about what's actually happening here, you're making something that doesn't exist. There's a million ways that you can get to it. Like, there's something you're trying to prove, but you don't know how to get there, and there are so many different options. It's going to go badly. It's okay to fail. I mean, not winning a grant doesn't mean whatever you're trying to fund is over. It means you need to fund it a different way. It might be a fit from other funders. It's just not a fit for them. And even more importantly, what you wrote is not a fit for them. Mm-hmm. There's a huge amount of information between what you know about your work and what you write about your work, especially when you have things like word limits. So all they're saying is they don't want to work with what is written on that page.
So, how do you think you might reframe what feels like rejection? There is something in us that goes there, that like either I'm worthy of support or I'm not. And getting so much of our psyche invested when we ask for support in this a way that feels very public and vulnerable and like this sort of referendum on your whole career choice, you know?
I think every human deals with a fear of rejection and abandonment. I think we're just all terrified of being rejected. And so that fear comes into play, especially in the realm of grants, because so many people are like pouring their heart and soul into a grant application. And especially for researchers, like, that's your life. This is your life work. Trying to distill that into the written word, it's hard because you're distilling your identity down to a few paragraphs, and that feels impossible. But it's not about you. A rejection there is not a rejection of you as a researcher or even of your work. It's a rejection of your application.
It's a rejection of your application.
Yeah, because some people are just not good at writing the application. I mean, it could be a rejection of your writing style, which is still not a rejection of you. It's a rejection of literally words on a page. You can sort of take that in stride and just keep going.
Well, yeah. Actually, let's follow that thread just a little bit. This is just a whole realm of fear and confusion. And when it actually does happen that you submit an application and you don't get the grant, it's not a rejection of you.
Yeah, it's hard to not, you see it everywhere because you put yourself wholly into something and make it part of your identity. Like, we're all trying to leave a mark of some sort in a way that no one else has. We're trying to manipulate these things and create something totally new. We're going to fail spectacularly many, many times. Your work feels like it's constantly rejecting you. Like, every failed experiment feels like a rejection.
I love how you put this. It feels like your work is rejecting you. That's really powerful. It can feel like reality is rejecting you, you know, because you've got some idea of how things should go, and that's not how things are going. Are there techniques that you've found that help to separate your own worth from those outcomes?
One of them is just ask. Ask why your application was rejected, because if you think it's personal, the answer that comes back is going to be depersonalized. Like, it because it isn't personal. It's going to be about, you know, this grant is for a particular thing and yours wasn't the best fit, or we really didn't understand what it is that you're doing. It wasn't clear enough, or we don't see the long-term implications of this. So maybe you're super clear on what those things are and you just didn't communicate it well, or maybe you're not super clear on those things and now you have your work cut out for you. The second thing, and this is a lot more esoteric, but maybe it's just not the right time. You know, maybe it just, this isn't it for you right now. Maybe whatever's on the other side of that, you are not ready for. You know, getting a $1 million grant comes with all sorts of requirements, and the requirements on you as a person are going to be very, very different. And so maybe you got lucky not getting it, and you'll be better prepared for it later. Researchers don't really know how to quit. Like, that's why they're good at their job. I mean, like, they just don't quit. They will keep banging their head against the problem over and over and over, which is fantastic. That's what you do every day in your research. You ask why over and over and over until you get an answer, and then you ask why again. A no is just a data point too. Like, that is helpful. I mean, technically you are closer, even though it definitely doesn't feel like it at the time. I think it's important to approach the applications as a way to build a relationship. It's a relationship. Your funders are trying to fundamentally build a relationship with you.
So if we approach grantsmanship from a lens of relationship, how would that change the way that we think about rejection? Because maybe that's one of the fundamental errors, is we think of it like they don't want a relationship with me. They're rejecting me in the way that we might, like, on the romantic playing field. Rather than seeing it as more of a collaborative growth journey, that we're in this like ecosystem in which we're learning from each other rather than saying who's in, who's out.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting, because I think in some ways that can make it feel like even more of a personal rejection. And I think maybe the term relationship is the problem here, because it's such a weighted word, with some really interesting connotations. Like you said, people immediately go to like romantic relationships, which obviously people understand when they're writing a grant application, they're not like proposing to the person, even though it is in fact called a proposal. But we're trying to see if there's fit between what it is that we're doing. And I think that's what's important, because if they say no, it means that it's not a fit for them. It's always been interesting to me that people take a grant rejection so seriously. When it's like you go to war every day to do your work, whether it's preventing homelessness or studying cancer, but then some random person tells you they don't want to give you money and you're like, oh my God, I'm being rejected. I get it. Like, I viscerally get it. I mean, I've been there with business too. It's very difficult to separate yourself from that. But am I diminished in any way if grant cycle goes belly up? No. It's a personal affront. Like, no, it's not. They don't care who the medium is. They're evaluating a product. They really aren't rejecting you as a person.
Let's talk some more about strategies for getting your head right prior to the application, like in the application process,
I think one of the big ones that can be really helpful is working with grant writers and consultants, like the work that you do. Talk to someone about the work. That would be my biggest piece of advice for the grant writing side of things.
It's definitely helpful to speak with another human being, to hear yourself explaining yourself, to see what they understand, what they don't understand.
It might take someone pulling that information out of you through just like asking you a ton of questions, but you know what to write. Like, you know what it needs to be. It's just a matter of getting it down.
But when people are writing, you know, I read a lot of grant proposals that all the ideas are there, but they're not in a logical order. They're not in the order in which a reader needs to absorb them. Do you have any psychological hacks for thinking about your reader or your reviewer that can help you do a better job in preparing the application so that it's written for the reader instead of being written for the researcher?
Someone told me about this event, I think in like Austin, Texas, and it's usually for startups, but it's called Pitch a Kid. And you have to pitch your startup to a panel of 12-year-olds. If a child cannot understand it, then it's safe to assume that whoever's reading this is not going to understand it, because you have to assume that the people reading your application are not experts in your field. So have your grandma read it or have your kid read it. Yes, there are going to be some terms and things that you can't break down any further. But if they're not understanding the logic behind it and the story that you're telling, neither will anyone else.
So when I have these workshops in person, the first thing I ask is who's been on a review panel? And there's always a few hands that go up. And then it's pointing out to the rest of the people in the room, that's who's going to read your application. That's what a reviewer looks like. But I think we have this idea of this judge, like Supreme Court or something, like making these decisions about the worthiness of our application. And it's always seen as very like the objective is to ruin you. Whereas actually you've got these very good-hearted, sincere people who are just trying to determine what seems viable.
Yeah, and it's super important to note that you can go talk to the program manager. You can ask them questions. Sometimes they will read something ahead of time. Build a relationship with that person. Like we've already said, grant applications are you proposing a relationship between your work and the work of the funder. So go build that relationship ahead of time, especially if they can see the progress of your application and they know that you're coachable because you were able to take their advice and make something happen. Now they already feel like they're part of your team.
What a great way to flip that fear to say, actually, it's a great idea to get in touch with the program officer early on when you're still developing ideas, because then they can see you take their advice. They can watch you grow, and that's going to give them confidence. So there's a real benefit to getting in touch before things are solidified.
Right. And psychologically, people like to be helpful. Also, they like to think that they have the answers and that they are useful. They want to help you. That is literally why they do what they do.
I wonder if you know what percentage of applicants actually do reach out to program officers. It may be different in the different fields, but I feel like the number is surprisingly low and far higher among successful applicants.
Yeah, I don't know what the number is, but if I had to guess, I'd say 10% or less. I would say it's a very small number who do reach out, but I would absolutely say that it is maybe one of the most important things. The other reason for that is a lot of people apply for things they're just a terrible fit for. Why would you spend all of that time or money for something you're not a good fit for? Reach out, especially if you have a question. Never guess. Reach out and say, hey, this is what I'm doing. It's close to what you're asking for, but is this okay? Maybe there's a way to tweak it where it is. Maybe it's just not a good fit. And they will typically tell you that and just be straight with you. And you can save yourself a lot of time, or you can know ahead of time, I cannot frame it this way. They will reject it like this. And now you already have a better chance of getting your proposal approved.
So back to that relationship concept. I was speaking with a researcher who, you know, she went through... She applied like 70 some applications altogether. And now she's at the point in her career where she's getting multi-million dollar proposal funded and seemingly with ease, but it took all of that. But what she was saying is that there was never wasted time because every application built relationships. So just in the process of putting the proposal together, she started building teams and networks. I think part of what I'm trying to impart to early career researchers is the idea that it's not wasted time, that you get so much out of every effort you make.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that if you don't approach it in your own little bubble or echo chamber. A lot of people sit down to write this stuff themselves and they consult no one. And I think the important thing is not writing in an echo chamber, like talking to other people in your field, because those are really important relationships to build too. So I don't think the time is ever wasted unless you are writing something, like writing a grant for something that you are in no way a good fit for, or if you are writing in a bubble.
Okay, I love that. That there are two ways to waste your time. One is to write in a vacuum without any input. And the other one is to write something that you have no business writing in the first place, either because you don't actually want to do it or because you don't understand the funding opportunity well enough to know whether it's a match or not. So if you avoid those two things, you're going to get rewards, either in the form of getting your project funded or building relationships or getting really useful feedback that lets you be successful in the future.
Right. It's data collection. Mm-hmm. And like, after all, that's what researchers do all day. Like, you just need to collect data on a separate thing. But then it comes down to, is this important enough to you? Because if it is, you will find a way. If it isn't, or if there's something else that's more important, that's okay. Like, you're not a lesser person for giving up something that you should give up. Like, giving up gets such a bad rap. And giving up's great. It makes room for other things. But you get to consciously make that decision. Is this what you want to do? If it is, go all in and go hard after it.
So I'll play with this. If there's just one message, like one takeaway that you would love for grant applicants to take from this conversation with respect to rejection and how they think about their journey.
Yeah, I think the most important thing is really, it's not a reflection of your career or your aptitude or the quality of your work. It has no bearing on any of that. It is literally rejection of words on a page. Find out what in those words was rejected. Take the data point. And then decide what to do. Do you want to apply for more? Okay. If you don't, make sure it's because you legitimately don't and not because you're reacting to some sort of rejection. Statistically, you're going to be rejected a ton. So, I mean, for lack of a better term, find a way to get over it and move on.
Beautiful. Ansley, you're amazing. Anything else you want to share about Grant Cycle?
So it specializes in post-award grant management. So after the money has come in, it bridges the gap between your financial management software and your grants. And basically what the system does is says this transaction funded by this grant and budget line item made this project or program produce this outcome. And here's the supporting documentation and the reports in whatever format they need to be in.
Awesome. Well, I feel like you've given me so much great stuff here, and I appreciate so much just your candor and your mode of expression. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Have a good one.
I loved putting together this episode, and I hope you'll find it useful to keep on hand whenever you need a boost or a reminder to keep going. I know rejection is brutal, but it means you're in the arena. You're doing what you can, and you are progressing. Keep it up. I'll see you in the next episode.